Hey there, Pounders. It's JRW and Seema here with the second installment of A Fifth of Spurs. How you doing, Seema?
Good, good. I was going to mock your fifth, but I think we covered that in the first fifth. So we're straight into business now. No more mockery of the fifth concept. We're in the second fifth of Spur of the year.
We are. We are definitely. This fifth ended with 2:24 into, or with 9:36 remaining in the fourth quarter of the Oklahoma City game. So nothing that happened in those last three quarters of the fourth and in New York are fair game. We've got to keep it in between when the fifth began and ended.
That's good, because I would just as soon ignore the New York game if it was okay with you.
I don't know what game you're talking about. We're talking...
Exactly.
There we go. This is the second 20% of the season, and I can't wait to break it down with you.
Let's do it. I want to start talking immediately about Tiago Splitter, because I know a lot has been made of, we'd be doing so much better. He'd be doing so much better. Why isn't Tiago getting more playing time? I want to hear your thoughts on why Tiago has not seen the floor any more than he has yet, and what we have to expect for the third fifth of Spur and Tiago Splitter.
Well, I liked what Indian Charlie said. He had a comment about, I'll just quote it. It appears Pop is bringing Splitter along at the pace of understanding, 180 degrees different from last year with Jefferson.
Yeah, that was a phenomenal point. That was one of those quotes we need to add to the lexicon, because I think he hit the nail dead on the head that Tiago is behind all of the other guys for various reasons.
Well, we don't add quotes to the lexicon. We put them on the quotes page. But I appreciate you bringing up the lexicon, because
whatever.
I love it. I love it. So
I'm pimping out your various adventures here. But it's a great point, because it really gets into, obviously I don't want to say Pop made a mistake last year, but I think Jefferson was expected to deliver immediately, like we've seen with other players. But, I think I mentioned it in a previous podcast. It's very enlightening when you watch sometimes, and I say sometimes because sometimes you have to deal with Kevin McHale and Chris Webber, but other times you get Steve Smith and Brent Berry on NBA TV. Or NBA TV, and hearing them at one point in the season dissect how difficult it was to play in the San Antonio Spurs system, their plays, their forms on defense, the rotations they expect, it takes a while to actually absorb and to learn that. So looking back, we can see that we almost all made a mistake expecting RJ to be RJ 2.0 last year. We should have known that it would be more likely to happen this year, and it looks as though the team, or at least the coaching staff, has understood that concept as it comes to Tiago.
Well, another factor is that Pop had other options. He has other options this year, and those options are performing.
Right.
The way that Neal and even Anderson before he got hurt. These guys are hitting outside shots. The offense is performing exceptionally well. I mean, number one rated offense in some metrics. Last year, there wasn't much of a choice other than let RJ sink or swim. And
right.
You can even make the case that RJ's time on the court last year is a huge piece of why RJ 2.0 is such a success, since
right.
All of those reps in 09 and 010 helped him gain the experience he needed to really own the offense. And he's got to play, when we go small ball, he plays power forward and center. So he's got to master all five positions. Just like 48 Minutes of Hell said in that excellent article they had.
So what you're saying essentially is more reps producing greater quality. Assuming there's no lockout, no CBA discussion next year, we're looking at 80-2 potentially, or 81-1 next season after the reps we're getting this year.
Because everything is always very linear like that. Thanks for pointing that
right.
out.
Well, except for Anderson. Anderson's going to be behind the learning curve, but next year will be his James Anderson's 2.0, hopefully.
James Anderson 1.0 is fine. Does he need to reinvent himself? Does everybody will there be a SEMA 2.0 next year?
There's no need for improvement with SEMA, JRW. You know that. No, I as much man love as I have for Gary Neal right now, I cannot wait to see Anderson come back into this lineup. But hopefully he can integrate smoothly and seamlessly back into the rotation and really kind of pick up where he left off, because we are going to be dynamic once we get yet another slasher and shooter on the floor.
I have to say, James has been out for so long now, and Gary's been playing at such a phenomenally high level that my man crush for Neal right now is kind of made me forget what Amper Sanderson was doing on the court before he got hurt. So no, I'm very excited. He's back shooting again this week, and can't wait to see him back on the court.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And don't feel bad about that, because I literally have forgotten what James Anderson looks like at this point. But it'll be nice to, like I said, it'd be nice to have another scorer out on the floor. The real story that you know, we talked about before we fired up here is Tony Parker this year. Tony Parker is really carrying this team. Manu had, you know, kind of a lackluster, if you will, second fifth, but you know, you can attribute that in a lot of ways. Manu was sick most of the second fifth, and Tony really stepped up. You have some stats about Tony.
Well, the random stat of the night, thank you for that lead in, is that San Antonio is 21-1 when Tony scores at least 15 points. Why 15 points? You know, you can make stats say anything, but that just stunned me, the fact that the team is actually pivoting on Parker as much as it is. And until this week, when Cap Hill had her excellent piece on the 10% theory, I had no idea that Tony was having quite the year he was. The fact that he already has more win shares in the first two-fifths of the season than he did in the entire 2009-2010 season.
Right.
That's huge.
Yeah. No, and 97% of the time, I do love your random stats. But I tell you, you break that down from a physical perspective. The reason that is true, the reason that is the case, is if you think about it, obviously, how does Tony Parker get his points? The majority of his points are slashing to the hole, laying it up, you know, spinning around, floaters, all in the paint type of points, by and large. When he's doing that, he's leaving shooters on the corners that are wide open at that point. And
sometimes he even passes to them. That's what's awesome.
And that's 17% of the time. But when he does do that, we are 21-1. So
when I said random stat, I didn't mean that you could make them up.
Hey, you know what? If we had more than 20 minutes for a podcast, like our first hour and a half podcast, I would back that up with some stats.
I don't think it was quite that long, but yeah, thanks for remembering.
I can tell you from some not bad stats, because we don't ever want to throw this as negative, but we've dropped a little bit in a lot of statistical categories in the second fifth of the season, and I think the reason being behind this, you can look at this and compare our first fifth podcast with this podcast. You can evaluate the stats between the two. The biggest difference is a lot of our numbers are worse, and I think that's not necessarily indicative of you know, a drop off in team play as much as it is. Teams are really just settling into their own right now. I've always said you really don't discover who a team is in the NBA, if you're lucky, until probably game 30. If not,
yeah, you've always said that.
Well, you just don't listen. I can hear your mockery. Anyways, offensively, we are fourth right now in the league. We're scoring 105.6 a game. Defensively, we're allowing 96.7. Now, that's 10th in the league. We dropped a little bit there. We allow 49.1% field goals, though, field goal shooting, and that one still concerns me a little bit. I'd like to see that a little bit lower, even though that's not too bad. I'd like to see it a little bit lower. But differential, we dropped. We're no longer the leading point differential in the league in the nines. I believe we're 9.6. We had this conversation last time. 8.9 points. 8.9 per game we're winning games by, second only to Miami. Miami, however, has lost only once since the 29th of November, and they've played virtually – they've played a couple of high schools and a couple of D-League teams. truthfully, they played Dallas and Utah. It looks like they played New York twice. They haven't had a lot of really, really tough, tough games. We've played New Orleans, Denver twice, Orlando, L.A., Dallas, Oklahoma City. We've had some quality games. So there's not a real big reason for concern for the drop in differential either.
No, especially when you consider the fact that all of these teams are scheduling their stars to be injured right before they play us.
Yeah, and that's getting into another subject about not getting credit where credit is due, but we'll save that for another 20th.
For another 5th, you mean?
Whatever, 20th, 5th, 1 over 5.
1 over 20, 1 over 5. Yeah, they are the same.
Pop doesn't care. Why should I care, JRW?
Fantastic, right? Because there's nothing that Pop wants to quote less than talk about stats, especially if the number is 70.
He's the Plato of the Spurs staff. What are your thoughts on how Duncan is playing? You know, we hear a lot as well right now about how Duncan is fading into the twilight of his career, and he's being helped onto the court by several handlers, and all of this. I mean, what are your thoughts on the validity of that?
Well, you know, besides the walker that he uses to actually get onto the court, and it does actually have those little tennis balls on it on the ends
right.
of the legs, just like the guy in Up. But once he's actually on the court, he moves quite well. Now, seriously, the way that Tim Duncan has always played, he approaches the game in the same way that Pop focuses on the team approaching the game. You win the game over a period of time. You don't win it all at once. That's what pounding the rock is all about. And Tim allows the game to come to him. And the years pass when virtually every offensive possession worked its way through Tim in one way or another as long as he was on the court. He would let a defender dictate what was open for him. In the first and second quarter, he would be fine making a jab step or two. If the drive wasn't open, jumper or banker. You know, if I don't have the spin here, we'll just, you know, shoot an outside shot. And if the shots were falling, awesome. He's making the score, taking care of his business. If it wasn't, that's fine. I'll go ahead and sit on the bench, and I'll be happy to come back in at the, at a couple minutes into the second and try it again. If the team needed him, which over the last few years it certainly has in the third and fourth quarters, then he would exert his will on the game, and he would start bullying his way into to the line, or doing that hold his man off with his left elbow and take that big step into the lane and get that jump hook up with his right hand. He would find a way to get to the spots on the court where he could make the shots that he knew that he needed, and he would wind up with a streak of 6 of 7 in the fourth quarter. What do you know? Suddenly he's got a good field goal percentage, even if at the beginning of the game his shot wasn't falling. Problem is, this year, we haven't needed him in the third and fourth quarter an awful lot, which means that a lot of what would naturally happen with the offense and going into Tim and pounding that rock and running four down over and over and over in the third and fourth quarters just isn't happening. So his field goal percentage isn't coming back up to the point where it would be respectable. So
right.
He's sitting at these 13.9 in points and field goal percentage lowest ever and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't matter to him.
No.
And it doesn't mean that his game has changed. And I love this quote from Quincy Scott. This was in the recap of the Wizards game. He says, "We're not going to know what he really has in the tank until the playoffs get here, and then we'll see. Maybe Duncan will be like Muhammad Ali in his last fights. Man, Ali looked great, but all the strength was gone. Or maybe he'll finish up things like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, simplifying his game to a few efficient things that his body could execute and aging like a fine wine. Or maybe he'll go out like David Robinson, cementing the Spurs' defense and getting leftovers on the offensive end. I can see all three of these scenarios as plausible. To me, Duncan is the real story of the season, how his story plays out. Even more than I want the Spurs to win a title, I want Duncan to leave the game on his own terms. There, I'm done." It seems to me that Robinson got that chance, and I hope this team is able to give Duncan something similar to cap his career. Now, that's awesome, awesome stuff from Quincy Scott, and I love it all the way up to the point when he says, this team able to give Duncan something similar to cap his career. I don't want Duncan capping his career in 2011 if it's all the same to you. Would you like to see him play another year or two?
Yeah, I'd like to see him play another year or two. But reality and being an objective sports fan, I don't want to see Duncan pull a Shaquille and just gradually just cling and cling like a barnacle on a ship, just cling from one boat to another. Not that Duncan would go from boat to boat, but I want to see him age gracefully. I think Quincy Scott said it best when he talked about Duncan leaving the games on his own terms. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one thing that's been pretty typical of kind of the Spur way of life or the Spur team way, and I don't see Timmy being any different. I see Timmy reaching a point in which, you know, he says, you know what, I'm done. I've made the money. I've got the rings. I've got all the accolades out there. It's time to walk away. And I see that happening sadly within the next few years. And you know, you and I can get into it in a future broadcast. But I've got podcast. I've got some concerns about Timmy's career, and you know, I've told you before, I think we're seeing some of the last days of Tim Duncan, and you know, we need to try to relish that. But nonetheless, you know, another good point with the point you made about, you know, Duncan not having lost it because of his lowered stats, you know, I almost want to tell some of the naysayers, if you're not going to say that Duncan's lost it because of his lowered stats, you can't then turn around and attack Manu when it's the exact same dynamic that's responsible for both of the guys. The team plays in response to need. Some nights, you're going to have a guy from Italy and Spain and Townsend, you know, Gary Neal carrying the team three games in this last 20. If I'd have told you that we'd have a guy named Gary Neal playing for the team, much less he'd be carrying us three games out of, you know, the second fifth.
Leading scorer at three out of the seven games at the end of 2010. That was... Right. What a way to end that decade.
Welcome to the league, Mr. Neal. But you, the team plays in response to need, and we just haven't needed Manu or Tim for the most part on the year, but Manu much yet, and even in December. So I think that, you know, the upcoming Rodeo Road trip is really going to tell us a lot. That's where we see the team traditionally gel a lot more and you know, thankfully and fortunately this year, it's harder to see the need for gelling because we're just doing so well with gelling thus far. But if you can imagine even further gelling and further cohesion and better team play, it's what I'd like to see come out of the road trip in this third 20th.
Further gelling, is that what Reiner does to his hair before those Fox Southwest?
that's right.
Yeah.
Further gelling.
Well, you know, we got to mention one more thing. We got to get into Pop. And, well, you know, I think the best thing to talk about today before we sign off on this podcast was a question that one Josh Geyer had when I was discussing something with him off the side. He said, Coach Pop always has note cards, and he looks at them during crucial times. I wonder what he has on them. And I guess my best theory is that the note cards have pictures on them from people in his life who have wronged him in some way, and he keeps referring back to them for motivation. You know, come on, Seema. You know, you gotta stay mean any way you can, otherwise you lose that edge.
See, I think there are pictures of wild animals on those cards. Like, okay. Pop will look at it and go, you know what, the remainder of this game, the remaining 12 minutes, I'm going to be a badger, or I'm going to go into copperhead mode, okay. And I think that's probably what it is as well. But it would be interesting to find that out. You need to ask some of your bigwigs, and because you're big time now, you need to find out exactly what is on those cards.
I've always been big time, Seema, but you know, people just knowing about it. That's great. I can see Pop going, I see Craig Sager coming up to me. I'm going to do this next interview like a Wolverine.
You know what you do is next time you go into a post-game press conference, raise your hand, get Pop to call on you, and then when he calls on you, don't say anything. Just walk up and hand him a card with a picture of a rhinoceros on it and see if he winks at you to see if he understands.
That's, I think, exactly what I'll do. Hopefully that would not be the last thing I do as a credentialed member of the media. But, you know, even if it is, we'll always be able to lean on Hershov now that he's in there as well. But that pretty much handles this fifth of Spurs as we've looked over the second 20% of the season. Do you have anything else you want to sign off with?
You know, I'll tell you, the last portion of the second 20th of the season, second fifth of the season, you and I had talked about it, and I said optimistically but realistically, I said, Dale, we're going to be lucky if we go – you know, we've got these remaining four games. We've got a Dallas, we've got an LA, we've got Oklahoma City in there, we've got Orlando. We went 4-1. We went.
Orlando was a loss.
Orlando was a loss. Yeah, we went 4-1 in that stretch. I predicted to you that we were going to go
2-3
out of the five, but I predicted to you that we'd probably go 2-2 in that stretch, and we finished 4-1. So it's nothing to frown about. I mean, we could talk about the game that happened this evening with New York. Obviously, that's not in the fifth, and we'll cover that next cycle. But I think we played a phenomenal second fifth of Spur, and looking forward to the third fifth.
I'm telling you that these 47,232 seconds went down very easy indeed. The second fifth of Spurs was a lovely drink, and we will see you Pounders later. We got another podcast coming up next week, and keep on pounding. See you guys.